With heart here, I don't mean necessarily the seat of emotions, although I will speak about emotions. With heart, I mean here something which supplies the life force, the energy, the kinetic energy, if you so will, the motor function, that which drives us, which keeps our practice alive. I would like to concentrate on this. I have learned when coming together as devotees, it's very important to make a real contact with each other. We will try now on the telephone. The real contact is there when we connect with something which lives in us, which is real at in us. And a person will immediately understand that. If a person speaks from that place which is very real to him, it's different than when he gives an intellectual presentation. So I will talk on what is real for me at the moment, and that is, I want to share with you in a short way, brief way, what I consider to be the motor, the driving force, the heart of our chanting, which will make our chanting into a very enlivened practice. We need to chant in an enlivened way. Mechanic chanting, especially when we are older devotees, and I understand several of you, if not most of you, are already for quite some time in the practice. If we are not enlivened in what we do, there will be this question, why do we do this? What is the benefit for it? But if we are enlivened, we will ask, why 16 rounds? Why not more? I want to chant more. It's the best thing I do in my life. Jiva Goswami tells us that there are really two ways of chanting. The one way is the way where we just chant dutifully, or because we are bound by a vow, or we just chant maybe to imitate someone else, like people who see us on the road doing our Ratha Yatra celebration and procession. They may chant in these ways, just chant. And then there is a second way of chanting, which comes from an entirely different place than the first way. It's to chant lovingly. Jiva Goswami says this in his Krama Sandarbha Purport to the 6th canto, 2nd chapter, text 20. And he quotes there a verse where Krishna speaks about these two types of devotions which are offered to him. The first being just chant, and the second to chant lovingly. Krishna meets the gopis, and he tells them, my dear gopis, O beautiful ladies of Braj, the living beings become immortal if they have devotion for me. You know something? Your love, which is living in your heart, forces me to come near to you. When a devotee chants lovingly with affection, Krishna feels compelled to come And then our chanting is what it is supposed to be. It's not just pronouncing the alphabets, but it is Krishna's personal incarnation in sound. This loving chanting or affectionate chanting brings the Lord to us. That's why Prabhupada would always say that the chanting must be done in the way a child calls out for his mother. Now we know that the child can call in two ways. Our Rukmini Mataji, who is experienced mother, and those of you who are mothers know when the child just calls lackadaisically, I hope that's an English word, just mama, mama, while being busy with its toys, the mother knows, I don't need to come, I can pursue what I'm presently doing. But when the child calls with a love or with a need, mother, the mother leaves everything away, knowing that the child also has left its toys away and is now interested in a real contact. Now, obviously the question which arises in us is, since we know all this, what I have said so far, how can we chant with love? How can we invoke this feeling? I mean, is there anything which can help us on our way to become more loving or more affectionate towards Krishna? And yes, there are two meditations which Srila Sanatana Goswami gives in his work Brihad Bhagavatamrita. There he gives us two examples from, we would say in Germany, the animal kingdom, the kingdom of the animals. I think you all know that often we are taught by animals who are given a human voice. For instance, in the famous Aesop fables that is done, or in the Pancharatna literature, where there's the sly fox who outwits the lion and who speaks to him wittingly, and we learn something from him. So here are two birds which are given voices, so to say, to teach us a lesson. Sanatana Goswami talks about this in the third chapter of the second volume, or second part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, in as far as I have here, note text 167 or around there. And he says, we should chant like the thirsty Chataka bird, which calls out for the monsoon cloud to come, the blackish monsoon cloud, because he needs to drink, like all living beings, and he has made the vow to not drink from the earth. That means not from ponds or rivers. No, only the black colored Siam cloud is acceptable as a supplier of his needs. And the second example is the Chakravaki bird, who laments out of separation from her or his lover at night. The Chakravaki bird goes through the jungle, or flies through the jungle, hoping to meet the beloved, but all he can hear is the calling of the beloved, ook, ook, ook. But due to some situation, some curse, he cannot meet the beloved at night for a romantic intermezzo. So he's really desperate, and his calls get more and more desperate. So these are the two, let us say, pictures or to speak now for to us Westerners, psychological frames of mind which are necessary to come close to the affectionate chanting. One, that we do have a need for Krishna. We actually need him desperately. And the second is, we also want a loving meeting. So I want to speak briefly on these two mindsets. Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his Shikshastakam, has illustrated the need. He has given the example that I'm drowning in this ocean of birth and death. Ye nanda tanuya. I'm needing to be saved by you and be permanently situated in your direct vicinity. I'm satisfied with the position of a grain of dust at your lotus feet, but I need this. My dear devotees, if you chant your Hare Krishna Maha Mantra with a deep sense of material diversion, feeling satisfied with the material life, you will not be able to experience the feeling which we are talking about. You must meditate about your being in need of Krishna, constantly in need of the divine embrace. That's important. That's necessary. And what I always do, because I'm also very much diverted. It's by the great wave of life, which in my case is because my occupation is being a preacher. That's my professional life. There are so many things going on always that really I have to schedule my time by the minutes by now. There are so many opportunities and so on. So, good. To come into that, to come to this place where I really can approach Krishna from a deep side inside, where I call out his need, I highly recommend reading prayers like the Sharanagati prayers. My dear devotees, this prayer book has saved my life, because it has helped me to come in a very, very short time to the place of the Chataka bird, the thirsty Chataka bird who calls with a genuine feeling of need. If we don't come to these, let me say, attitudes, if we don't come to these platforms from where we can really call out the holy name, we will not be able to chant attentively our rounds. There will be so many thought frames in our mind. And yes, I'm doing pranayama, but that's the yogic way to calm the mind or to bring the mind under control. Yes, and I want to teach in my next visit to America 5 powerful pranayama exercises which do magic to the mind and bring calm it down. But really, that is not that's something on the way. That's not our goal. Our goal is to chant really with the force of devotion, with bhakti. We are bhaktas and not mystical yogis, and our way is to invoke the force of devotion by us, and that we do by reading the prayers. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has recommended the 4 songbooks of his exalted father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, to all his devotees to read them on a daily basis. I can't imagine that they had to read every verse every day, but just to walk through these verse books, which invoke feelings of affection. So, and the other example was the Chakravaki bird who does something out of love. He is there, he wants to meet his beloved ladybird, or if the ladybird wants to meet the beloved he-bird or partner-bird, and there is a loving emotion, especially if they hear the other one is so close, it's walking somewhere through the forest. So we as devotees, we all have a feeling that Krishna is so close, he is nearby, he makes arrangements in our life. He has brought Deva Prashta Prabhu from Washington to the Govardhan retreats. Krishna is so close, he has helped very often Anutama to do the most amazing communication miracles so that he could save our movement from mayic aggressions. Krishna is so close in every one's life. I don't know all of you. I know Rukmini and others who name sound familiar, but think about how Krishna is close. But have you met him? Is your relationship there? Isn't he for you very often like that other partner who just, you know, he walks through the forest, you hear him whoop whoop whoop, or however they call. I have never heard Chakravaki birds in a conscious way. I was often in Indian jungles, but I didn't listen to the life in the night, but I can't make out the voices. But I can imagine if someone hears the beloved being close, then the love becomes so intense. Imagine the gopis in Kurukshetra. They knew Krishna is also here, but they could not yet see him because their relationship was of a confidential nature. Only in the evening they finally reached a fulfillment where they could see Krishna. Krishna at that time, and I want to give you now a Vaishnava illustration of closeness. Krishna saw all in Kurukshetra, had seen his parents, his friends from Vrindavan, but the gopis, they were left out still because of the confidential nature of their meetings in the night, and so on. So finally the evening approached and Krishna knew, now my most blissful and my most difficult task comes. So I have to see or I can see the gopis. So he first sent Uddhava, his trusted messenger whom he had sent already one time to Braj, with new saris and gifts which would gladden the heart of the gopis, to where the gopis camped. And Uddhava came back with this load of saris and said, the gopis have become very angry. They have said, we don't want saris from Krishna. We want Krishna. He should take back all his saris. This Anna is not what we want. So Uddhava's mission had failed. Krishna smiled. He knew the feelings of the gopis very well, and then he came, moved towards them, so full of emotion, and he saw the gopis staring at him and crying when they saw the Krishna, just crying, so much emotion, just crying. And then Krishna had to say something. He said, do you sometimes still remember me? Something which he said in a loving way, these words. And the gopis then, after he had said this, which in modern communication is an icebreaker or a tear breaker or a way to start a conversation, he then the gopis began to speak, and a very, very wonderful communication ensued. And Krishna there, he said this, you have love in your heart. If that is there for me, then this is like a force which carries me near you. And so then I have to come. I have to be present. Then obviously in other literature, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Krishna reveals that he every day visited his dear devotees in Vrindavan. And from other literature we know that only on one level was there ever a separation. On another level, of course, Krishna was always together with his beloved devotees in Vrindavan. Anyways, it's this. My point is here: the affection which should arise, especially in all of us who are younger, who are not younger devotees, who are older devotees. And it is with this in mind that Purusha Shukta Prabhu suggested me to write down a booklet of prayers for chanting the holy names of the Lord. In this booklet, an attempt is made to just present some very powerful prayers to the devotees, which at least worked or work my life to I will now say an English slang word because I'm not so good in English, to start me up, to get, or how do we say, to get me started in that internal path where I can address the Lord with genuine emotions and feelings. I really want to suggest to all of you to go through these prayers, and I want to give you an example how I personally do this meditation of prayers, in the hopes that you just see one person, hear one person, in this case it's your servant Sachinandan Swami, and then after this that you go on your own. You have to we all have to learn our own path. We can learn from another devotee, but we have to, by seeing him walk before us, but we have to go our own path, because this is so important to me to communicate it to you. I would like to give you an example how each one has to find his own path. Once, 10 years ago, I was so fortunate to visit the temples of Nrisimhadev in Ahobilam, or you can also pronounce it Ahobalam. When you pronounce it Ahobalam, it means, oh, what great strength. There is a village which has this name, oh, what great strength, because it is the village where Lord Nrisimhadev had appeared and dealt with Hiranyakashipu. So there are nine mountain caves, which is really an adventure to visit, and one was a mountain cave which was particularly remote. You had to actually move, imagine this, underneath a waterfall. So when you would walk, you have to move barefoot, because it's a waterfall which falls high from the mountain, and you go behind it. That means you walk on a on a notch, I think you call it, a rocky notch, which is connected with the mountain and which is full of these slippery algae and other plants which grow there due to the constant spraying of the waterfall. So there is only 50 centimeters which you can use, and on your left side a huge abyss that if you fall down this abyss, if you should slip and slide and fall down, yes, then hopefully see you in Vaikuntha, you know, it's the end of this body. So obviously everyone who goes under this waterfall is highly nervous, and only adventurous people feel an inclination to negotiate this way, because when you have such an abyss on your left side, you feel the path which is available to you is only as thin as the line of a pencil. Psychologically you feel like that. So when this line of the pencil is slippery, then it's really scary. So what to do? We took the shoes out, because with bare feet we have a closer grip to the rock, and then we walked the slippery path. And there was one devotee who was very good in adventurous things, and who told me how to walk. And while I was in the middle, I found out that my body is simply not made, nor is my mind made like his. I have to walk in my own way, get my own steps, which are appropriate to my body and my mindset, in order to not slip and fall. Because when I followed what he said to me very accurately and didn't apply and digest it into my own walking way, then it just didn't work. I felt insecure. So I stopped and I thought under the waterfall where I would put my left foot and my right foot and my left foot and my right foot, and then was successful. So yes, we can only we can show and encourage you by we can look at the examples of great devotees like Namacharya, Haridas Thakur, or examples of good chanters maybe in our neighborhood, in our lives, like Dravida Prabhu. I watched him. He was on the last retreat so overwhelmed, he cried while he chanted. There was really something going on. Or Rukmini has Rukmini cries very, she is very advanced, she quickly cries in relationship to Krishna. But we have to see how it works for us. We can see these people walk before us, and they can give us tips, but then we have to do. So let me just therefore walk a little bit before you now in the art of prayer, and take one prayer which I particularly like. If you do have the chanting from the heart booklet before you, it's not absolutely necessary, but if you do have it, please open the page 25, and I will now say this prayer. Samsara sagaranato putra mitra griha kulat goptaro me yuvam eva prapana baya banjano. One should pray, O Shishi Radha Krishna, please rescue me from the ocean of birth and death. Please rescue me from the troubles born from children, friends, and material home. Please break into pieces the fears of your surrendered devotee. Then the next verse reads, O Shri Shri Radha Krishna, today I place myself and everything I possess, both in this life and in the next, at your feet. I am the home of all offenses. I have abandoned all spiritual duties. I have no shelter. O Shri Shri Radha Krishna, O my lords, please become my shelter. O Master of Radha, I am yours. O beloved of Lord Krishna, I am yours. I offer to both of you my thoughts, words and deeds. You too are the goal of my life. And the last verse. O Shri Shri Radha Krishna, you are like two great oceans of mercy. Please be merciful to me. I take shelter of you. I surrender to you. Please engage me, a sinner and an offender, in your service. Now when I started to recite these prayers to you, my dear devotees, I must admit to you, my mind was still in the presentation mood. I'm trying to say something which is of value to you, and therefore my mind goes through these different files which are there in the life of a preacher. So often I talked about spiritual subjects, so my mind is concentrated on what I talk, and I have also some part of my mind scanning parallel for something, or searching for something in my repertoire, in my storage of preaching points, to present them to you, to present these points to you. So I was a little diverted, like I can also be diverted when in normal situations, when I just sit down to preach. But then I did a little technique which I want to suggest for you now, to where we slowly start to reach the end of our meeting on the phone. I did a technique which I'm trying to apply since many years, but which I'm really have, in a way, I don't want to say mastered, but which I have made closer to my heart in the last year. This technique goes like this. I know philosophically that the mind can work on different levels, for instance, being moved by these pushing forces, the vegas, manas, for instance, krodha, anger, or lust, or all these things. It can move in being with this vibration, but the mind can also move with vibrations, for instance, of an understanding. When I went to Anuddha Mahaprabhu's excellent communication seminar in New Vrindavan, and there was this one point that everyone is tuned into this what's in for me wavelengths, and he gave an example which I have used a million times now, of a student who did no longer communicate with his mother, but then when the uncle caught him on, or brought him on this wavelength, what's in for me, he immediately responded, you can ask Anuttama when you meet him in person. It's a wonderful illustration. Our mind can move, for instance, in the mood of, let me say, understanding another person and then forgiving him or her because of that understanding. Or our mind can move in a loving mood and so on. It's different frequencies, if you so wish, which are possible. So in what I have said so far is I want to wanted to give you guidelines how to move your mind into a devotional frequency, which you need obviously to chant. But now I want to offer you, in the closing of our session, a tip how to, because we are not always so devotional, unfortunately. We are normal people with an extraordinary opportunity. Some of us may be very advanced from previous lives, but I like to think of myself as an ordinary mortal with an extraordinary opportunity. And sometimes it's not so easy to, even when you have a prayer, to come on a devotional platform. So then what I do, when I'm really on a low consciousness, which is definitely more than often the case, then I do something which I now want to recommend to you. I just go and sit down somewhere where I'm not disturbed. It can be a forest, it can be a boring lecture where no one looks at me and where I can go in my own direction. It can be anywhere, in the car. It's easiest to do it when you are alone, maybe in your room, when you have some solitude for this. And then I'm going inside, and I first see and acknowledge what my mind is busy with, what frequency is the present one, what concerns me at this moment in my life. Then I simply ask the question, is this what you really want in your life? Is this really your deepest desire? And then I find out, no, this is momentarily my situation, it needs to be taken care of, but let me go deeper to find my deeper desire. And I go deeper and yet deeper. I'm almost like a coin which you throw into a well, and which goes in dancing movements towards the stones on the bottom of the well as it sinks more and more into deeper waters. And I go like this through the different layers, through the different thoughts which occupy my mind, the different levels, and finally I arrive at my real yearning. I am kind with these levels of the mind. I don't think they need to be suppressed or anything. I acknowledge that they are there, but I'm saying now I want to come to a deeper place and find out where I stand in life. What do I really desire? What really makes me, comforts me and satisfies me the most? And in my case, I arrive because I'm a visual man, I arrive at the bank of the river Yamuna. Other times I arrive just somewhere where I call out for Krishna. Oh Krishna, I'm getting older, my body has been so painful since 2 years. Oh Krishna, please, look in my directions, the kindness, I have a need for your love, and so on. And then, once I am there, once I have gone there, then I can start to chant in that way which I'm today speaking about, that is chanting with affection or chanting lovingly. Let us conclude with a little statement which I find very appropriate. It's when you only chant with your lips, or out of duty, or when you are in this first level, this just chant somehow or other, Krishna definitely takes notice of you, or he is someone who chants. But if you chant affectionately, or with some trace of affection, some trace of feeling, when you chant with the heart, Krishna takes something else happens. Krishna takes notice, plus, this is a very important plus, his heart becomes moved. And when the heart of the Lord becomes moved, waves form, waves of mercy which flow in your direction. And then when you chant with this mercy of the Lord inspiring you and carrying you and so on, then it's very easy. Consider a ship. When a ship wants to go over the ocean, it requires the water very much. The water carries the ship on its journey from one continent to the next continent. The water is there in a silent way. Sometimes it speaks to the ship when the wind moves the waves, but often, or at least in my example, I'm thinking of silent waters which carry the ship in its ongoing journey. So also for our chanting, we need a silent factor, that is the mercy which carries our chanting onwards. Sometimes if you chant very excitedly, very, very moved, like our Dravida in this Menla retreat, this year, then also it's a stormy mercy, the waters rise and some very good and maybe even hefty emotions are there which bring tears. But usually Krishna's mercy starts with that ocean-like mercy, that silent ocean-like mercy, I want to say, which just carries you in your chanting, that you have a good sailing in your chanting. But that mercy only comes when Krishna sees some affection or at least some attempt to move in that direction comes. That attempt does come when we try to bring, maybe through prayers, maybe through this method which I have introduced to you, that method, I call it the method of the coin, the coin which dances down towards the bottom of the well, that exercise which brings us in contact with our real and not our superficial life. Alright, so according to my time estimation, I have talked for 40 minutes now, and with German punctuality, I'm closing now this part of the session, and I believe now some other part will start, which our Purusha Shukta will introduce to all of us. Thank you very much for listening to me. I'm really feeling a very useless servant of you all, but if this is so that I'm that you are listening to me, then my only chance is to connect deeply with what is alive in my heart and then talk about that. So thank you very much, and Jai Srila Prabhupada, and now we will go on in a different way. Hare Krishna. Yes, I'm here. Yes, I'm with you. Yes, I am understanding. Now, the best time is traditionally the morning time, the Brahma Muhurta time, which happens before sunrise, 48 minutes before sunrise. That's that time where the atmospheric influences are most supportive for concentration of the mind, especially on devotional subject matters. Now, if for some reasons you are not able to take advantage of this time, maybe you have a life where you go late to bed and whatever other reasons, you're a little old or whatever, and in the summer that time is quite early, very early, then the best time is really when you can be concentrated. So, but traditionally it's the early time. Prabhupada, about time, said he would chant when he was a grihastha, 4 rounds before each meal, morning, noon, evening, and there must have been another meal also. Do you take care of temple deities who require a very punctual schedule? Home deities. It depends on your relationship to the deities, but it's good to do deity worship in a prayerful mood, and therefore a little japa is good to first start a japa, so that you can come on a devotional platform, and then interrupt the japa and take care of the deities and chant the rest of your rounds later. There is no hard and fast rule, but normally when we have deities, we should attend them according to their needs, like a baby. He can't wait for anything. He has to be taken care of early. So I would not chant all the rounds before you take care of the deities. Chant some rounds, then take care of the deities, and then chant the rest afterwards. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Oh, Deva Parastha Prabhuji, Hare Krishna. Oh, glory to Srila Prabhupada. I know you, Deva Parastha. Yes. I totally understand your question, and I would like to give you a tip for these situations which you have described. There is a working place, there is the riptide of all this passion which is there at any working place, and now you need to get out of this riptide and not become a victim of materialism or the material atmosphere. I suggest you do 3 steps which are all found in our Vaishnav tradition, and then after having done this, your chanting will be, your concern is your chanting all right or not, will be solved also. First is just understand, let us say your working place is teeming. I will now paint a picture. Oh, this phone call comes in, or this meeting is there, and you see there is this person who mobs against that person, and like this, and you feel how the atmosphere grabs your heart. Then first step is stop. I'm an eternal soul. Just become aware that you are not the body and the mind. that you are aham brahmasmi, that you are a spiritual soul, a part and parcel of God. That's where all spiritual life starts. Then the second is that you take on an observer position, which you can have from this simple meditation which I had described. I'm an eternal soul, and just see, almost like you would watch a movie or something in the TV before your eyes. Just watch it from a neutral position, not in an involved position. And I really found in the Gita a verse which I would like to recommend you to study. It's in the 5th chapter, verse 8 to 9. It's how the self-realized soul sees when he takes things and accepts them or gives other things away. He really is not doing anything. Only the body and the bodily senses are active. This is a very good verse and nice purport which will help you. And the last step which I always do in my life is I connect with Krishna and think, oh Krishna, how could this be your mercy? For instance, I'm still in my sati sate period, and this means for me I'm have constantly some pain, big pain, that I have to take painkillers. But when the pain becomes so unscrutinizably big, I just say to myself, okay, I'm an eternal soul. Second thing is, I observe everything from a neutral position. And the third is, I pray, my dear Lord, there must be a reason why you give me still pain. So, most probably, I have not yet learned my lesson. And thank you for caring for me, that you really make sure I learn my lesson. So this is, I think, a very easy way. And then, once you are there at this place which you reach with the third step, when you are at that place, you can easily also chant. And Krishna understands, Deva Prastavyan, these are not rounds which you chant. They are just the sincere outcry of a devotee, and you may just have reached Hare Hare, and then that lady who is mobbing against the other man turns her sharpened eyes towards you, and what are you doing for our company? And you at that moment are not so much with the Hare Hare, but you are upset with the unfriendly lady, and then you just continue, okay, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, keep cool, Deva Prasta, like that. It's not your best rounds, but Krishna understands. Hare Krishna. Who are you? Archie, are you the one who writes in the Back to Godhead articles? Sorry. Good, Archie. Please continue. It depends on the person and his mindset. If he is a little sensitive, then I think we should give them something which helps them. These techniques I have all, you know, developed them, or how could you call it, from my understandings of our Krishna conscious philosophy, and I think it gives us an additional chance to explain newcomers our general philosophy of Krishna consciousness, our worldview, our understanding of the universe. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if you want to chant properly, you need an understanding of sambandha. And sambandha means your relationship to this world and your relationship to God. You need to do this. So the techniques which I have presented today are really all philosophically in that area, which is called sambandha, just knowing how to deal with the world and to deal with the Lord. They are not yet very advanced. The advanced things are, they are different. I mean, they are very devotional, in other words. So these are just things which, you know, I mean, to pray is also very devotional. That's a fact. You have to see what works. But I personally believe very much that these things are very helpful also for newcomers, because let us not have any illusion. If our mind is just on all these other frequencies, or to say it in simple ISKCON jargon, if we are spaced out, then there is not so much of a penetration or pervasion of our consciousness. Plus, we know Krishna is not so much present there. He takes note of our chanting, but his real reciprocation starts at the moment when we are approaching him affectionately, and that even a newcomer should learn. I mean, Prabhupada says it in the On Chanting Hare Krishna. He says one should chant like a child who cries for the mother. It's necessary. You can't not speak about it. It must be discussed. Loka Hare Krishna. How nice that you asked this question, which is very relevant question. Of yes, it's definitely all right to chant when the body is so tired, but you might have to look also at your whole life. In when I hear your voice on the telephone, I can hear it's a tired voice, because I often have that same the same sound of the voice. And I mean, in old monasteries, people would whip themselves to stay awake and so on. But is that really practical for a whole life to do that? Or translate that into your situation yes, you can walk, and there you can also sprinkle water on your face, or you can hang yourself on the frame of the door. I mean, not on the neck, but with your arms, or to do creative things to stay alive. But is that really japa meditation? Is that really a perspective? The Vedanta Sutra has very interesting comments of Baladev Vidyabhushana, where it says, to meditate or pray, one needs to sit. I didn't have these quotations. I only got them after I visited Radha Desh and gave a japa retreat there. And then, so that's the very concise about it. To pray or to meditate, and to meditate is done in sitting. Now, then, after many other verses follow, Baladev Vidyabhushana says, but ultimately, whatever works best for you, where you can concentrate the best, that's the best situation. In other words, after describing the glories of sitting and full concentration, He also says, well, ultimately it's really up to you. But why should you be tired? I think you should sleep enough. That's my immediate response. And then when you are awake and fully awake, why should it be so that if you even stop your walking and you just lean against the wall and bang, you're on the ground, that's not normal. You must do something in your life that you maybe find less working hours, or then in that case you can also, when you come home, you can chant some amount of rounds before the work. Then when you come home, then you just, first thing is you need to relax, you go under the shower and just wipe off all these things which are in your memory. Then you may eat a little, then you may sleep a little to rest, and then have a sattvic situation in your apartment where you can then chant. But to give a simple answer, my simple answer is yes, anything which works is the best for you. The more, let me say, the answer which makes you more reflect is to think that, to look through your life, if that is, if maybe you work too much or just time management, I think. That's my answer. I'm not always sure if it's so wonderful. I'm a little an intense person, so my dear devotees, I'm much better when I see you and see if maybe I'm sometimes saying things which are too German, but please see the good heart behind it. Hare Krishna. Yes. Haribol, Haribol, Haribol. There is definitely a great benefit which we can get from doing exercises or introducing new ways also in our chanting, and that benefit we may not be able to derive from other sources so easily. See, there is just the simple understanding: if you keep doing what you are presently doing, you will obtain the same results which you are already achieving in your life. Only when yes, only when you introduce new practices, new reflections, new thoughts, new habits really into your life, can you expect to move on to another level. So these homework, so to say, which are really only suggestions, are meant to bring you to a new experience, to a new activity also, and then to a new result or new new realization in your journey with the holy name. That is the reason why we want to do this a little practice oriented and not just a good talk or a talk, and then we hear you next week and so on. No, we want to help you to go to another place, really. Yes, Purusha Shukda Prabhu, can I please, because now we have the rare fortune to be together on the phone, when you have said farewell to everyone else, can I please just talk with Radhe Radhe? Can I please talk to you just for 5 minutes? When everyone has said goodbye, so to say, or should I stay on this here? Good.